If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret, searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
The Sound Podcast is part of the OSIRIS Network. OSIRIS is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. We'll be doing many live events this summer around the country, which will include artist interviews, contests, and more. Sign up for our newsletter at osirispod.com to stay in the loop. Relix Magazine is a media partner of OSIRIS. For more, visit relix.com. The show starts now.
Hey, this is Robert Walter of Robert Walter's 20th Congress, and you're listening to The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Current Futures off of Robert Walter's 20th Congress's forthcoming release, Spacesuit. The thing about being a talented musician is that you are often in demand to play with many different people, and in doing so, aren't necessarily afforded the time to make your own records. Such is the case for keyboard whiz Robert Walter. He's been touring extensively and making records with Mike Gordon, and is always ready to jam with whomever asks. So when I heard he was releasing a new record with 20th Congress, I was psyched to check it out. What's different is that Spacesuit isn't inspired by a specific musical genre, but instead explores the imagery and sonic landscapes that come from space, science fiction, and comic books. Besides, Robert can play any genre on a multitude of keyboards, so why not work a different challenge in? When I sat down with Robert to talk about his latest record, Spacesuit, due out September 21st, we talked a lot about influences and assembling the songs on the record. Our conversation started, though, when I asked Robert how long it took to put this record together.
Well, some things happen real fast, and some things take longer. For my own albums, because I don't always have a working touring band, you know, I'll take breaks and be working with Grail Boy or working as a sideman with other people. Whenever I have a break, or I work on a lot of film music with Michael Andrews, he's a guitar player in Grail Boy All Stars, but he's also a film composer. To work on these things. And then I sort of write my own music whenever there's a little break or while I'm on the bus, on tour, or whatever, like it's just a bit by bit. And I just make big playlists of sort of demos and then sort of see what sticks for me. So my albums take a while to work on. The tunes themselves come quickly, but there's a lot of them. I sort of have to sift through them and figure out what's going to work and then figure out what musicians would sound good on them and all that stuff. So it usually takes me a couple of years start to finish working on an album.
Right. I'm curious about the ideas, because there are, you know, in each piece of music and on each track, there are so many different ideas. You know, this record has 10 tracks, and given the first is really just an intro to the record, and Electric Blanket is sort of, you know, the end.
It's sort of a bonus, yes.
Yeah. But the 8 tracks that compose the album have, you know, in any one of them could have 3, 4, 5, 6 different ideas. Those are all ideas I assume that you jot down or you make a playlist of. But how do you put those ideas together to make some of these compositions?
I mean, most of the time, the tunes that really stick for me kind of come out all at once, where I've actually had it where I woke up in the morning and out of like a dream I had or something, I know most of what the tune's going to do. You know, I hear where the melody goes. I'll have to tweak some things and maybe add an intro or figure out what's going to happen during the solos or things like that. But the more fully formed it comes, those are usually the tunes I end up playing over the years. Like tunes from old records of mine that end up in the set still, most of those happen quickly. And the ones that I work harder on, for some reason, they don't tend to stick with me as much. Maybe just because they're not truly as inspired. You know, they're more craftsman-like. Like, oh, well, you can put this here, and then it needs a lift, or you add a bridge. But I like when it kind of comes from the ether. Like, there's something, there's a magic that you grabbed that just came to you, you know? So, that's the ideal situation. And then there's always a little bit of work that's involved, and you know, maybe you figure out how many times you want to repeat a thing, or maybe it needs some change here.
What are the basics?
They're not actually bits of different songs. They're like everything's composed as a piece that goes together, you know.
Right, but that comes in the composition. But when you're noodling around, I guess you have like an organ or I don't know what you do on a bus. When you're noodling around, you are just doing parts and coming back to it. You're not writing these whole pieces all at once.
Well, I write at home on a Fender Rhodes usually, and record the stuff on my little voice memos on my phone.
Right.
And then I'll take it and I have it like a MIDI keyboard, and I'll play the tunes into my computer and play all the different parts. So I'll add drums to it, and I'll add a bass, you know, it's fake, but like you know, what I think the bass should be doing and what I should think if there's horns, what those should be doing. So I sort of mock everything up on the computer.
And you're writing when you're on a Fender and you're recording these voice memos, are you also writing down? Are you writing down parts too, or is
sometimes
it...
I write them down on paper, but I went through a big phase where I tried to get away from working like on the computer, and I tried to write things so that I wasn't prescribing such a like what the tempo was or what the tones were.
Right.
You think purely melodically, and I went through a phase of that, but now I'm kind of back into. Sometimes I'll write just from a drum part, or sometimes I'll, you know, things like that. So I don't often write the stuff down. I'm responding to the sounds. I'm trying to do it as fast as possible. So.
And are you thinking about specific players? Like, are you thinking when you're doing the drums or the bass, are you thinking of Simon Lott or Victor Little? I mean, are these things, or even, you know, Chris Alford, are you thinking about how they are going to play these specific parts, or is it still very organic at this point when you're writing stuff?
A lot of the music for this album was recorded with that band in mind, just because I know both their strengths and limitations, and we have a chemistry together that I was pretty excited about. So I wanted to create like sort of vehicles for those guys to go off. But sometimes there'll be a tune that's just been around for a while. Like Nerva and Dumbo has been around, knocking around for a couple of years now. And I've tried to do it with Grey Boy All-Stars, but it didn't really work out.
Right.
For whatever reason. Like there's a few tunes like that have sort of been in my thing. And then they shift a little bit when they get to this group. But then a lot of the other music, most of the other tunes on this album were written specifically for, oh, Simon would sound great on this, or Victor would sound great on this. So.
And when you're composing, because you're composing on a Fender Rhodes, are you also thinking about how certain parts will sound on a B3 or on a Clav or a Mini Moog? Like, are you thinking about all of those different sounds too, or is it just again?
I mean, I like that. The best tunes to me, you know, again, are sort of. The chords and the melody and the rhythm of them work so well that you can play them on different instruments, and they'll sound different, but they're like a classic jazz tune or a Beatles tune or something like that can be reinterpreted with different sounds and still retain its integrity as a composition. Where there's other things that are made more as records or tracks, which really is about the sounds and the tones. But I'm interested in writing songs that sort of can be reinterpreted and used in different ways. But I do imagine, oh, that would probably sound good on the organ or whatever. And sometimes I do set up the B3 and play that. It makes you compose a little differently because the notes sustain longer. They have a different character.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, you know, the Fender sort of, you know, doesn't have the disdain of the Hammond, or and there are other things that it's
more like a piano, and it's different than piano too. Like when I write on piano, I tend to do certain things, but I can sort of imagine what it would be like on different instruments.
Right. So you know, you hear piano on most of all of us. I mean, you hear those piano lines, even though you're writing them.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Yeah, and that seems like a piano thing to me. Like,
right. Got it.
Just made sense.
And so you take these compositions, and is it, you know, are they pretty much well written, or do you give the freedom to the musicians who are, you know, jamming with you and putting these things together? Do you give them the flexibility to add and subtract as they see appropriate, or are you kind of, is it really important for you to stick to what's gone on in your head as you've put these down?
I try to make it as skeletal as possible.
Right.
Sometimes there's like a rhythm arrangement that I'm really into it. But with this group, I try and like, I'm like, this is the chords, this is the melody, and this is kind of what I'm going to play. But I don't want to tell them too much because I like what people come up with. It's different. Some things have an idea of a beat, like the tune Chalk Giant.
Right.
On the new album was written around a drum pattern. So I gave that to Simon. He interpreted it and made it his own, but it was a thing. But other tunes, I just, this is a tempo, it's in 4/4, it's in 3, and do something. And Simon's great at coming up with ideas that me, you know, I play drums a little bit, but he's the expert. That's why you have the musicians around. They're not just I don't think they're just there to render my parts. I want them to, like, bring their own character to it a little bit.
Right.
And then there's big parts of the music that aren't really composed at all. Like, you were talking about Most of All of Us. There's, up until it gets to the piano solo at the end, uh-huh. It's a composition.
Right.
And then I just said, we're in C. so do whatever you want. And that's the most of the tune.
If there's a stadium rock track on this record, it would probably be Most of All of Us. I mean, that, you know, it really stands out to me as, I don't know, hockey
yeah,
game.
Yeah, it was a little influenced by, like, The Who,
right.
And, like, even, like, old Genesis, sort of, like big epic.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You know, stuff.
And I do want to touch on Chalk Giant, because, you know, there is that main melody, and then... What I really appreciate about it is that Chris goes for this really long solo, like right off of you, off the main riff. And it just seems so natural. And that's why I was asking about whether that's something that you've composed or he hears you playing, you know, your line and then says, okay, well, time for me to step up. And you know, it just blends so beautifully. And I'm just curious if, you know.
Yeah, I really like that moment too. I think it's a lot of that just from playing a lot of gigs together, and
right,
you know, we've been playing as a band for a couple of years now, and we don't tour a lot, but there's enough of a history of where you just kind of nod your head and then the next person will take it and we can trade off, and everyone feels confident enough that they can step out without feeling like they're going to be inappropriate or like doing too much. I like when we sort of knock each other around the room.
Yeah,
you know, somebody will push you, you know, it's cool.
And certainly the New Orleans sort of meters or, you know, and feel is definitely exists in Chalk Giant. And I can tell that from the percussion and the drum beat. I mean, I even thought Little Feet
that's
a little
definitely
bit.
The most New Orleans influenced of the things. Some of my other music has been more funk or New Orleans based, depending on what it is. I actually thought it was interesting to take Simon, who his drumming kind of always has a little bit of that in it.
Right.
You know, that's just his sort of natural mode. But to have him play things, for the most part, they were less sort of on-the-nose New Orleans rhythms.
Right.
So you kind of take him out of that zone, but the feel kind of still creeps in there, you know, just to do something a little interesting. And then that one kind of drives it home, which I love that kind of music. It's always been a big influence. And
absolutely.
It always feels great to me.
And it certainly comes across. So many different styles and influences in all of these tracks. And then you sort of had to put them together under this, you know, space suit, space exploration, space movie type vernacular. Was that hard for you to do? Were you thinking about the general packaging of this when you put the songs together, or is that something that came after as you thought about putting these down into a record?
I had a really big group of tunes that I started with, like 30 tunes or something, and these were all ideas I liked, and then it's sort of like the concept of, like, how do these tunes fit together came about. And I started looking at all this art by Chris Voss and Mobius and all these, like, sci-fi kind of people and watching these movies. And then it started to distill down to, like, about 15 tunes that all sort of, in some way or another, had those elements in them and influences. And some of them were written while I was thinking about that stuff, and some of them were pre-existing things that just fit it. And then from that, we recorded a lot of those tunes, and because of the performances and what instruments we used and the way that some things just didn't work and some things worked but didn't sit with the other songs. So then it kind of, like, you know, it just keeps getting edited down until it made sense to me. And to do it without being real obvious, you know, it's not a traditional concept album with a story that goes through it. Yeah, I think they managed to, for some reason, like, things magically sat good once I got to this final playlist. But it did take some tweaking. Like, some of the earlier sequences seem a little more schizophrenic.
Well, you know, in fairness, a lot of the tracks within themselves seem a little bit schizophrenic. I mean, you go on...
Right.
But that's cool. I mean, that's cool. And each song on its own could be a soundtrack probably for a space film of some kind. It's interesting that, you know, there's a track Post-Human, but for me at least, Current Futures sounds more post-apocalyptic than Post-Human. I don't know.
Right, right. Right. That's the big sort of, there's a lot of, you know, my love for like dub reggae and
right.
Kentucky and this, it's like futuristic music, but you know, old.
Yeah, yeah.
Retrofuturism, I guess. You know?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like, there's something about, you know, he would just take these reggae rhythm tracks and start subtracting elements until it became so abstract it's a whole new thing. It applies all this meaning to the hi-hat that you would never have if you didn't pull everything out and focus on that for a second. Or the bass by itself becomes so profound because you just shine a light on it by removing everything else. And that's a great concept that I try to bring to it.
How much overdubbing did you do? Or is it you and your octopus type hands playing all those parts? Or is it a case of you absolutely needing to go in and sprinkle some fairy dust on some of these tracks afterwards?
There are overdubs, but there's not as much as we got a lot out of the original track. So we tracked everything live as a group.
Right.
And then just did some, like, Mike Dillon came in and played some percussion, and I do a couple layers of keyboards maybe. But most things were live, and a lot of the drum effects are actually performed live by Simon, who has a mixer on the side of his kit and a couple mics that are he's sending to that. So he always has that running, and he'll on the fly be playing effects while he's playing drums.
Right.
So I always had those tracks, and you know, we'll use parts of that for some of the delays and, you know, effects like that from the drums. So a lot of that's performed live. And then, you know, I did go in and tweak some stuff and add some synthesizers, but mostly it's live.
There's a lot of power chords, power bars, and gadgets, I would imagine. I mean, you must be, because I think you're a total geek when it comes to all of this stuff. You must be in heaven when you see all of these, not just your stuff, but everybody else's tools and what they're, and pedals and whatever else people are using, right?
Yeah, I like gear a lot. It's just, you know, it's a fun thing, especially older instruments and older pedals and stuff. They just have like there's something mysterious about, like, where was this thing and what band did this belong to back in the 70s or whatever.
Right.
So, I was like that. I like the way they smell, you know, old equipment.
Is there a reason specifically that you choose to write on the Fender Rhodes? Is it just out of convenience, or is it a sound that you particularly... I'm a huge, huge Fender Rhodes guy, and so I'm curious about why you choose to write on that instrument as opposed to writing at a regular piano or some other kind of keyboard.
Well, for the easy answer, the quick answer is what I have set up in my living room. So it's
right.
The quickest thing to go to. Like, if I'm listening to a record, I can fire it. If I wake up in the morning and have coffee, I'm like right there with it. And
right.
All the other gears, like in the garage or upstairs, and that's like right in my zone. But the reason why it's there is, you know, I had never really played one. I was a piano player. I played a little bit of organ occasionally, and I was interested in synthesizers when I was young. And then I joined Fairboy All-Stars, and I bought a Fender Rhodes to play in that band, because a lot of the records that we were digging
right.
had Fender Rhodes or Hammond organ, but we couldn't transport a Hammond at the time.
Right.
We were playing local gigs, but we were doing a lot of flying to gigs, and I used to have I got a little 54 key Rhodes, which are hard to find, but they're a little smaller than a normal 73 key Rhodes.
Right.
And I used to be able to check it on an airplane.
Wow.
As a bag. You couldn't do it anymore. It's, it's too heavy and they charge you overweight. But back in the 90s, you could totally do it. It would come down on the carousel and everything. So we'd fly this to all these towns and then rent an amp when we got there. And that was my rig. And I fell in love with the sound. It's almost like everything I played on it, I liked it. When I first got it, I was like, this is amazing. you can sort of close your eyes and put your hand down anywhere, and it's just sounds beautiful. I love the way that the different notes bang against each other and the overtones develop. Miles Davis said the same thing, and Gil Evans liked that instrument because it reminded him of writing for horns. And Duke Ellington actually used to compose on one. Later in his life. So there's something about it I just find very evocative. It's sort of the best middle ground of all the instruments I like.
Slightly less or more convenient than carrying around the Leslie, I guess.
Yeah, it's still heavy, but a little bit less.
You're touring this record? Is that the plan? Are you're going to be out on the road touring this record a little bit?
Yes, there's not a lot of dates on the book right at the moment. We're doing a little West Coast run, and we're doing some stuff in New Orleans and in Texas.
Right.
But then later in the spring, we're going to do a little bit more touring. It's just hard. I've been juggling all the bands, so I'm juggling all the bands, and everybody in the band are juggling bands. It's a little tricky to get us all together, but that's the plan, is later in the spring to do a bigger tour, both West Coast, East Coast, and then I always end up playing Colorado and some stuff in the Midwest too.
Right, and always taking pictures of yummy food, which is probably the most important thing that you do.
Yeah, that, and then I go to record stores every day on the road too. Those are my keep myself busy on the road. And it's part of the great thing about being a musician is being able to travel and check out all these places.
Well, this record certainly takes you all kinds of places, and I would suggest that if you put it on late at night or into the evening, you'll certainly go on a voyage. Thanks so much for this record. It's a lot of fun, and there are, I have some favorites. Chalk Giant is definitely one of them, and we already talked about Most of All of Us, and I really like the record a lot. It's a lot of fun. Nerva and Dumbo, you said, has been kicking around for a lot. I think that comes across, too. I think these are, and I don't want to say well-rehearsed performances, but it seems like all of the musicians really dig in and really, you've gotten some great performances out of them on all of these tracks.
Oh, awesome. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm a fan of those guys, too. So it makes it fun to listen to the album to me to be able to hear them play.
Cool. Thanks so much for doing this, man. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
I'm telling you, this cat and his friends on this record can play. The scene is pretty fortunate to have so many talented keyboard players in it, but what I appreciate most is the level to which all of these guys spread their chops into various tones, sounds, and jams. Robert and the 20th Congress will be playing a select number of dates around Spacesuit's release, and to learn more, visit robertwalter.com. Before we leave you, have a listen to the funkified Nerva and Dumbo, also off of Spacesuit.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.